Sup? It's season fucking three.
Everyone, welcome to another episode of the Uncommon Commander Podcast, where myself and other guests talk about uncommon rarity printings of legendary creatures. Sometimes we get to run them as commanders. Today, I have a returning guest I'm stumbling already! Empress Quinn, hello!
Hey, gamers, what the fuck is up?
We're back, you're back, because rarity downshifts happen in Commander Legends. Or Commander Masters. Dang it, I'm messing up. I know every single magic card, single magic set in existence.
We're fine. We're doing great. Commander Masters granted the artisan players with a bunch of super sick downshifts for like the commander slot, one of which is Tabarax Hope's Demise, who I have had built since he came out in Zendikar Rising. So I'm like the all ears emoji with the like smiling and the hands next to its face, like looking up at that, like adorably, because I get to see a bunch more decks out there, like of Tabarax. I don't think I've seen anybody else who's built that deck yet.
I remember when previews are happening for Zendikar Rising, and I saw Tabarax come out, and like we've entered the point, oh, look, commander players are ruining Magic and they're over designing. Listen here. We need to fill out the roster of legendary creatures on each plane so we can kind of get an understanding of what the plane is about, who are the key characters in the story, if you enjoy the story or not. And Tabarax is just a random demon that just happened to be there. And, you know, let's trim the fat. Like, let's get a 3-mana 2/2 flying demon that cares about clerics. So, you know, if it has lifelink, it has 5 or more counters on it. +1/+1 counters. And then if another non-token creature you control dies, put a +1 counter on Tabarax. If that creature was a cleric, you may draw a card if you do lose one life. Well, as it turns out, there's a lot of clerics. And it was also the set that was focused on that little party mechanic that, you know, only the most dedicated actually really lean into. And it's just really cool to have a payoff for clerics in Mono Black.
Mm-hmm. I do really like the party mechanic, just for the record. I'm one of those dedicated people. Got me a 4-color party deck that's also an initiative deck, so I'm leaning all the way into what was going on in that set. But here for Tabarax, he's got that text that cares about clerics, and I don't know about you, but the thing that came to mind when I saw him and that he cared about clerics was, oh, perfect. I finally have, like, a commander for Shadowborn Apostles that's not Athreos. So I put the deck together, and instead of focusing on, like, activating the Shadowborn Apostles abilities and doing all of that, I wanted to, like, weaponize the existential threat of having a flyer that grows in the command zone. And sort of just, like, feed clerics to the machine of Tabarax and play Demon Voltron. So that's the main game plan here. I play a bunch of Shadowborn Apostles and turn them sideways into extremely unfavorable combats to force my opponents to make awful decisions of, do I take one from these Shadowborn Apostles, or do I take this easy chump block and put Tabarax triggers on the stack to grow the boy and give Empress Quinn card draw? And people really, like, they'll sit and think about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that as we've kind of entered this point of, like, okay, so we need to fill out planes with characters, we also need to kind of flesh out, like, what's their relative power level? How do we navigate, like, their mana value and everything? And it's like, okay, Tabarax comes out early, 3 mana's great. Mm-hmm. And then there's the decision-making of, yeah, so you could do this at any time. You can boost him, end of someone's turn. You can do it in combat. You're drawing cards, also. So you're digging deeper into more Shadowborn Apostles. And it's just, it's a neat little engine once you finally get everything going. And then maybe, you know, if you need to pivot, it could be like, I do happen to have enough Shadowborn Apostles to crack six and go fetch out, oh, I don't know, Asmodeus the Archdemon, or make
Asmodeus
another.
Asmodeus is actually a devil, which is my one, like, flavor.
Oh,
fail.
Dang it. You're right. You're right.
Yeah, I did put the Devil God in the deck, but it's because I can't legally play Grizzlebrand, so I'm going to get as close as I can.
As close as possible. Huh, let me pay three on the stack, sacrifice Asmodeus, pay, draw seven cards.
Yeah, I mean, that's a legal game action that you can take, or if you've got some fucking guts, you can literally just press that, return all of the cards exiled with Asmodeus to their owner's hand and lose that much life and just pay life for cards, because Tabarax will have lifelink at some point. And also, I put a bunch of knives in the deck that help with that. We've got Shadow Spear, which gives him lifelink. I also give him the Hand of Vecna, which will make him fucking massive, and when he's got lifelink and he's large, then you gain all that life back, so it's not as big of a risk as it looks. I know a lot of people are, like, sweating that that downside there on Asmodeus, but, like, I don't know, man. It's a bad deal with the devil. Like, lean into it.
Yeah, I had I had a guest about over a year ago, Ben, who's a writer on Commander's Herald, and he was running an Asmodeus the Archfiend Commander deck.
Sick.
And it's just all about that, like, okay, we're gonna have Asmodeus flitting in and out of the graveyard. Still gotta get it down for six, which, you know, not impossible. You're playing mono black, there's a lot of ways to turbo out a bunch of colored mana out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Your only singular dark ritual of you know, bunch of creatures, very few instant sorceries, which I find very funny.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just turbo out Asmodeus, start paying that three, sacrificing it on the stack, like pay as much mana as you can to draw that all those cards, and just laugh as you're like, and now he's in the graveyard, what are you gonna do about it? And I'm like, yeah, we were worried about Grizzlebrand, and now we got to deal with this.
Yeah, I mean, it is a couple of extra steps, so we do appreciate that for it. I mean, Grizzlebrand is just like the buttons right there, and he has flying and lifelink.
Yeah. But, you know, you obviously got a good spread of other, you know, besides the Devil God, who, you know, is kind of that, like, we just gotta put him in, because we gotta do it.
Ignoring my little flavor fail, I've got Dreadfeast Demon, who is always a caps lock fucking problem. At the beginning of my end step, I sacrifice a non-demon creature, like, I don't know, Shadowborn Apostle? If I do, create a token that's a copy of Dreadfeast Demon, and you just fill the board with 6/6 flyers that want to eat everything that you have that's not a demon, and it's your job to find enough clerics so that you can keep doing that, so that you can just Sorcerer's Apprentice spin out of control with 6/6 flyers.
Yeah, I have a copy of this card in my own sort of mono black demons deck. It's that flip Jaren Ormondal from the other Return to Innistrad that we had. Which one was that one? It was Midnight Hunt, was it? Anyway,
it's either Midnight Hunt or Crimson Vow, and it's not a meaningful distinction.
No, you're there on Innistrad. Stuff is happening. Dreadfeast Demon is one of those cards where you're like, yeah, this is technically, you know, a bulk rare, but then you start realizing that as long as it's still sticking around, and you make another one, and they make two other ones, as long as you are feeding that engine, your end steps suddenly become very deadly, and you got blockers, you got flying blockers and everything. It's a good card. It's just a shame we don't see it as much.
Yeah, I absolutely adore it. I think people are probably just scared that it'll eat your board, but once again, you're playing a demon. You gotta make sacrifices for power. That's what black mana does. And you gotta have some fucking guts.
Yeah, especially nowadays. Like, yes, back in the day, creatures were bad, and the demons really made you pay your costs, but, like, we think about what we have to work with now, like, sacking a creature at end step, and yes, it is a mandatory non-demon creature that needs to be sacrificed, but we're a bunch of commander players, we know what to do, we build these decks with intent, mm-hmm. we know exactly what we're doing. And, you know, like, you get stuff like, in your case, I see here you got Kofaped Soul Hoarder and Razaket the Foul-Blooded and Demon Lord Belzenlok, because, you know, you couldn't go all the way with four of Liliana's demons.
I so did have to grab three. All three of the legal of Liliana's demons. That's just, if you're playing a demons deck, you gotta at least think about running those ones, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, oh, but why would you run Kothaped again? There's treasures all over the... Shush! We like playing cards like this sometimes, because guess what? You're still going to be losing life and drawing cards, so you can find an answer.
It's a bad deal with the demon, baby. If I die to that, I die to that. I'll pay that price for power.
Just how it works in these games. So yeah, like, your low curve stuff is great. Obviously, like, your Shadowborn Apostles take, like, literally 20% of that. Mm-hmm. You know, you get a blood gift. Sorry, not a blood gift. Blood Artist stuff. You got Vito. Because you gotta get that lifelink somehow.
And yeah, then you kinda... I either force my creatures to have lifelink, or when Tabarax does have lifelink, then I can also, like, multiply his damage, sort of, because I gain the life and then burn somebody for the amount that I gained there. It's basically a damage doubler if you squint.
And, you know, good old Sir Conrad the Grim, I hope I can get my hands on a Secret Lair version of this, because... It's Sir Conrad. What's not to love about him? I know some people absolutely hate him, because if you breathe, you just take damage.
Yeah, he sure does have a lot of text and an ability that triggers when anybody so much as thinks about making a creature change zones. So I absolutely have him. He's probably, like, the best fucking aristocrat, and we show some fucking respect to my husband. I also ordered that Secret Lair, so we're gonna put that version of him in a deck somewhere. I'm not sure where exactly, because I got a couple places where I run a Sir Conrad.
You know, like, if you're playing black, you might as well. I mean, I know Davey has, like, every deck that runs black in some way has a copy of Sir Conrad, because she absolutely adores that card, and I understand why.
Mm-hmm.
You could make a brand around it, I'm sure.
And you really could, and I kind of did for a bit. Like, literally every time I cast Sir Conrad, I would be like, it's time for your friend and my husband, Sir Conrad the Grim.
Yeah. Too good. Always. I wonder if we will see new versions of the Knights in Eldraine coming up.
I would love to see new versions of those Knights, but I also just want them to flesh out that order, I guess, more fully and show me more Sirs.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting that we're getting that Sir Gingerbread person.
Apparently. Yeah, we've got Sir Ginger Meal Ender.
Any stats yet, at least as far as I'm aware, but
yet. We just have the art and then that sick fucking, like, name on the card, so we're very much looking forward to what that shows. I think we also got some sick art for Homegirl with that hammer, Sir Imidane, so we might see a card for her, fingies crossed, because she sounds powerful based on the story.
Yeah, I understand, like, anyone who listened to the previous episode, there's much enthusiasm for Ixalan, but I am also looking forward to Eldraine to have it not be absolutely dominating standard with its fire designs and ember cleaves and fires of invention and whatever.
No, I'm
other
opposite. I'm hype on that, and it's time for Eldraine to fuck up a standard set again. Rise.
No, we don't repeat history. We don't need it.
Yes, I was born on Eldraine, dude. Give me that gas again.
Okay, all right, that's fair enough. I mean, heck, if we can have whatever Arthurian sword that will be showing up in the set, we'll have to look forward to that. And let me just double check one thing here. Okay, yeah. Obviously, besides, like, the bulk of creatures here, you got your demons, you got your clerics, you got a few other things here and there that are focused on draining people's life. How did you round out with everything else? Like, I see here you got, like, Elbrus, obviously you got Ashdod's Altar. What made you pick and choose the rest of the deck that allows this to function?
Right, so we selected Elbrus the Binding Blade because that was one, probably one of the first mythic rares that I opened, and two, the back half of that is Withengar Unbound, who is a legendary demon who is flying, trample, intimidate, and whenever a player loses the game, put 13 +1/+1 counters on Withengar Unbound. Yeah, he's also this, a 13-13, like, I'm absolutely going to play this knife in my demons deck, and it's not, like, good or anything, whatever. You have to spend 8 total mana to get that down and then deal combat damage, but my commander's going to deal combat damage because that's the point of the deck, and I have the big black mana package of, like, Urborg and Cabal Coffers and that Ashnod's Altar that we talked about. I can throw clerics on that to A, feed them to Tavarax, and B, generate colorless mana to cast my demons hard, like, from my hand if I have to. So all of that means that I'm going to be able to cast Elbrus when it gets to that point, and I'm going to be able to flip it most likely. And when I do, I've got this massive existential threat in addition to my commander, and I'm just like, life totals are going down, and if you don't have flyers, woe betide you.
One of the things coming, like, starting playing Commander around after Innistrad came out, and me and my friends were coming into Ravnica, we were playing stuff like Elbrus the Binding Blade because we knew it was going to be absolutely janky. And of course, we were still lamenting, like, oh, why can't we play it as our commander? That would be super cool. Like, it's just got the mono black identity, right? We just pay 7 mana to put this equipment into play.
Yeah, you can just do that.
But that, you know, back then we were, rule zero discussions were not as prevalent as, like, they are now. So we were like, but this was also the same group where a buddy of mine, Derek, came out, and he's like, so I'm playing Grizzlebrand as my commander, and we were like, dude, that is hella banned, and he's like, what? Yeah. And we're like, yeah, play that tonight, but yeah, that thing's busted. And then he's like, oh yeah.
you will see why this is banned. You get precisely one night with this power.
Yeah, it's, you know, there are times where it's like, oh, how about we play with banned cards? It's like, this is one of the reasons why these cards are banned. I don't even need to go over that with you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Elbrus was sort of like the backup, like, I don't know, we can ramp into it and then maybe flip it around. And don't get me wrong, it's not a good card, but I'm also playing that, and also another card on this list here, in this exact same style of deck, where I'm like, I gotta get the Cabal of Humans who are worshipping demons in the night, and then we're gonna flip those, you know, those, oh, look at this blade, it's so nice, let's flip it, oh shoot, it's a 13-13 demon, what are we gonna do about that? What if we just start annihilating opponents? And then throwing a 26-26 at someone else and make them have to worry about that. You know, we don't need Blightsteel Colossuses or anything like that. We got demons.
Exactly. I'm so glad you understand. I've got this awful Cult of Humans, and they're going to deal combat damage with this dagger to unseal their Dark Lord. And all of that flavor is exactly what the fuck I'm playing Commander for.
Yeah, and then, hey, let's go to the next Innistrad set, and let's talk about Westvale Abbey.
Thank you. We are absolutely needing to go there next, because this is the same sort of shit. Westvale Abbey is this land that you can pay 5 and tap it and pay a life to make a 1/1 white and black human cleric creature token. So if I'm desperate for bodies to feed to Tabby, I can activate that. But the ideal scenario here is I get 5 Shadowborns or something on the board. I pay 5, tap Westvale Abbey, and sacrifice it to transform, or sacrifice 5 creatures, sorry, to transform Westvale Abbey and then untap it. And it transforms into Ormondal Profane Prince, who's a legendary creature demon with flying, lifelink, indestructible haste, and 9 power and 7 toughness. So this guy comes down, and he's absolutely going to help me stabilize and end the game, because he's got flying, lifelink, and indestructible. Like, you're not going to blow this guy up, and he's swinging right now with that haste, so, like, answer my 9-7 in the air.
Yeah, this is an example of where I think, like, whenever, regardless of whether you think Innistrad is, like, going back again for another time is going to either be a hit or miss because either they've maxed out, like, the design space or whatever. But this is, like, peak gothic horror design at its apex of having a sealed, powerful demon locked behind a ritual that requires heavy investment. I mean, having to pay effectively, you know, maybe it's easy for some decks, maybe it's not for others, but paying effectively six and then sacrificing five creatures, you better make sure no one, like, immediately yoinks this thing into non-existence by, like, swordsing it or something, you know? You're like, I want to be able to swing with this. Please let me do it. And they're like, I don't know. I mean, it's pretty strong. But when you finally get the ability to do this, it is such a huge adrenaline rush of, like, you know what? I worked my butt off for this incredibly powerful card. I certainly want to start swinging out with it because it's super sick.
I played Elbrus the Binding Blade and Westvale Abbey in the Secret Lair precon with the Prismatic Bridge and transformed both of them, and also ended up cutting a card for this silly little battle, Invasion of Pyrulia. And I was able to flip that as well. And the key thing that that does is it gives itself ward and also gives my transformed permanence ward too. So all of my guys that I had put a bunch of effort and stuff into flipping then were protected. And people were just like, how are we going to remove these giant demons if we can't even touch them? I have to blow up this silly little trampoly boy first.
I mean, it's the Shalai problem. I ran into that the other night where I have to keep reminding myself that, no, I cannot target the thing that I want to target. I have to target Shalai first and then move on to everything else. And that's just ward and hexproof at its best when it affects everyone.
It's so good. I don't have any of that in this deck because, you know what? Sometimes you just... we're just going to recast the thing instead and it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in this case, it's like, one, we don't have the luxury of having things be tutored out or have the advantage of playing with green. Mono black can do just fine with, you know, Urborg and Cabal Coffers and Cabal Stronghold, you know, the little brother of Cabal Coffers that I very rarely see.
Yeah, the great value coffers.
It's just a shame that I don't see Jaren in this deck.
I own a copy of him and just cannot find where to put that card because the slots are so tight, gamers. I've had this deck for a bit. All of these cards are in here because they fucking whip ass at what they do, and making those swaps is just so hard for me.
Yeah, I'm notoriously bad at trying to make cuts, and you're already pretty low in the land count, too. You're running 33 that are not a modal double face card that is a land. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're just doing your best, you're playing a very themed deck here, too.
I'm, like, cutting it close on lands because of the nature of this curve. Like, 20% of my deck, like we talked about, is one drops with all of those Shadowborn Apostles. And with my commander being three mana, like, I only have to get to three, and I have a bunch of card draw in the command zone. All of that means I'm going to find my land drops. So I'm not as worried about not hitting them like I would be in another deck, you know?
And then finally for you to top it off, sort of like, all right, well, if we're leaning into the Cabal theme of a bunch of cultists, you backed it up with the Eye Hand of Vecna and the Book of Vile Darkness.
Yes, my dark cult will absolutely be attempting to assemble Vecnatron and bring forth our dark god Vecna. Having actually accomplished that, it is a really, like... that 8/8 with all of those abilities, plus the Hand of Vecna text in particular, like, it does a bunch of work to close games.
Yeah, it's also one of the, like, on top of flipping Westvale Abbey and flipping Elbrus, it's making Vecna, it's like the commander, bucket list of just, hey, let's get all these achievements. Even if I don't win the game, I've won the game.
Yeah, that's... I really do have three different Exodias in this deck, basically.
And sometimes you're like, I counter Exodia's effect. Like, cool, I play another one. And they're like, wait a minute, hold on. You gotta stop that. That's just
you've
magic in a nutshell.
Them?
When you're the problem. It's like, oh god, it was like, what was it? I can't remember if it was filler for Yu-Gi-Oh! I don't know how you define filler for Yu-Gi-Oh! But there was that part where like they went into the digital mindscape of like Kaiba's adoptive dad. And he's like, ah, I have Exodia, but instead, because I love jumping through hoops, I'm gonna make Exodia Necros, or whatever the heck that thing was, and it's just literally a palette swap. And I'm like, so then you're literally, like, dicking around now. Like, this is, I mean, one, peak Commander game energy of just dicking around. But, like, you know, you in a 1v1 environment, you should totally be crushing your adoptive son, who is, like, a much better player than you. It was just it makes no sense, but that's Yu-Gi-Oh in a nutshell.
Yeah, that arc sure made some heavy air quotes choices. But also it gave us the like really satisfying emotional context of Kaiba and that relationship and the brothers and all of that. So like there's some good to be had in it, but also, man, some stuff happens, huh?
Yeah, you know, playing Pot of Greed draws you two cards, but maybe three if you're using it as a meme. That, don't get me wrong, when I was a kid and I watched Yu-Gi-Oh!, I saw the highs and lows of a bunch of those episodes, and I'm like, you know what, I'm pretty sure that if this game was actually being played as, like, as straight as it's actually meant to be played, like, this show would not be as absolutely batshit as it was.
Absolutely not. You have to bend some of those rules. Like, what is even the point of the power of friendship if you can't summon Dark Magician from literally someone else's deck?
And what's the point of, like, literally affecting probability in such a way that you're like, it's the heart of the cards because I believe it. It's like, no, you literally have magic powers. You're an ancient spirit of an Egyptian pharaoh in a Japanese anime, and you're literally, like, breaking reality.
They're doing some leaf blower shit outside right now. Hang on.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
What the actual fuck?
It's like when the, in our apartment complex, they're like, we're gonna have someone with a leaf blower is gonna come by in the back, and I'm like, this is literally the worst.
Yeah, I have no idea what they're doing.
Do you want to go, like, check it out, or?
No, they're, like, this is normal for them. It's just annoying, and I don't. Yeah, anyway, whatever.
Oh, well. I can edit it out or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's not a big deal.
Right. I think they're doing the other side of the thing now, so we probably is fine. All right.
It's probably fine. Yeah, and I also just find it funny, and it's also, hey, it happens to do with the subject we have to talk about today, is that on top of having, like, all of these commander check marks of achievements or bucket lists or whatever, is that you have put in the adventures in the Forgotten Realms cards of D&D. You know, we've both been playing Baldur's Gate 3 lately, because, like, who hasn't? Everyone and their grandmother is basically playing it right now.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of those, I'm normally not the person to be like, all right, let's talk about game of the year video game, but I've already done that with Zelda, and I adore Tears of the Kingdom. Baldur's Gate 3 has been really fun to play the last, oh god, has it only been a week? I think it's only been just over a week now.
Something like that, yeah, and it is just consuming my every, like, side thought.
Like, I'll be working from home throughout the week, and my girlfriend and I will be playing, or, like, I'll get home, we're like, all right, are you ready to play? And she's like, yes, so we immediately jump on, get side by side, and we'll play for like hours, and then we'll be like, well, it's coming up like 6 or 7 o'clock, we should probably have dinner. We're like, yeah, I guess I have to be a responsible human being, and you know, sustain us, and then get back to the game for like another few hours. And then when I'm going to bed, I'm like, but I want to play more, but I have to be responsible. And you still lose sleep anyway, because you're like,
what are we gonna do next? You just be up late thinking, like, what is that fucking rock that Shadowheart has?
Yes. How far are you about right now in the game?
I'm still in Act 1. I'm doing a bunch of the, like...
the side stuff.
Yeah. So, I think I'm on the, like, main quest path now. I'm, like, working the Goblin Camp part, and then there's the Shattered Sanctum.
Yeah, okay. So, maybe we'll go a little bit spoilery, because at least I know most of Act 1 right now, because we might be coming up late Act 2 ourselves right now. But what I find really funny is now that the game is out, and there's a bunch of us Magic players who are playing it, and especially me, when all these characters are showing up, and all these, like, words are being said, and characters are being mentioned, I'm like, I'm the Leonardo DiCaprio point, yes. And be like... hey, wait a minute, I know that person, I know who that, or what that is, you know, and, like,
there is a whole thread in one of my Discord servers that's just for me to do that.
obviously, game design is absolutely insane, and Larian's been doing, like, they've done Divinity Original Sin 2, and I absolutely love that game, it's incredibly well made, with some minor jankiness here and there, because, you know, no game's perfect. But the fact that I've been, they sat for like an extra year, a year and a half, tuning it, getting that game nearly as bug free as possible, and obviously it's going to go through its patches and everything. We're still going to have like random scrolls in like the environment stuck behind a wall that you can't grab or stuff like that. But now that we've had to play with Commander Legends said Battle for Baldur's Gate, and now we're playing this game, I'm just, like, really excited to go back and take a look at a bunch of other cards that have come out, or that came out of the set originally, and being like, when will this come up?
Yeah, I tweeted guess the we'll other wait. Day, I can't wait to see everybody's new Baldur's Gate decks, because the game had just come out, and I'm just like, oh, everybody's going to want to revisit that set, and then they're going to build decks around it, I guess. So I'm looking forward to seeing everybody's new decks, and then following that, yeah, it's actually happening. People are starting to build new Baldur's Gate decks with their little favorite guys from the game.
You know, like, obviously the companions are going to be probably a big sticking point for a lot of people.
Yeah, I've got this copy of Astarion the Decadent on my desk right now, who is sleeved up, and there's a pile of cards underneath him that one day will be honed into a playable commander deck, but I'm doing the thing that I tweeted about.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it, personally, and I'm not sure who... it'll probably just be Karlach and something else, but I'll have to workshop it. But it's just, I obviously, first and foremost, the companions are going to be a huge focus for a lot of people. I do find it funny, right? Because hilariously enough, we got to Act 2, and I'm like, okay, so we smoked Lazelle, like, immediately. I sent her to the depths of Avernus. I was like, you do not belong here. You are gone. Because I'm a paladin. I'm a paladin of vengeance. You will not ask me to slay random innocents. Thank you very much.
I just told her to F off.
Yeah. And then we were going around, and we had everyone else but Gale. And I'm like, where the fuck is Gale? And I'm like, everyone's like, okay, so the companions are all around in Act 1, and they're gonna be all around the beach, or at least relatively close enough to the starting area. And I'm just like, okay, so we got Will, which I thought it was, like, Wile, but, like, listening to the actors actually pronounce these names, I'm like, okay, that gives an extra bit of context. So we got Will, Shadowheart, Karlach, and... we eventually found Astarion, because we were like, where the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
And then we're like, where's, I'm like, there's another one. And I'm like staring at the card. Like, I have the card. And I'm like, where are you?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, all right, I guess I'll have to like be that person and look it up a little bit. Cause like, we've gone everywhere. We're in Act Two. We're going to all these places. Like, how do we narrow it down? And they're like, Rando Cliff in like the starting area. And I'm like, what the heck? And I walk over there and we're like, oh, there he is the whole time. Luckily, he can just play catch up really easily. We'll just level him up automatically to whatever level on. We'll, we re- I respect him into an Eldritch Knight just because I wanted an extra fighter.
Ooh.
Or like a melee class, and who knows, might flip him back to wizard depending on what we need. But cool thing you could respec in the game. Oh my god, what a great find! I don't know.
Yeah,
can you do that? Have you found that?
Yeah, one of the later things that I did actually was go back to that temple from the beginning and pick the lock on the front door, just like waltzed right on in and opened another door. And then that like secret door with the weird switch, I opened that, and then there was like the five guys in there, and I was like, oh, this is the thing that I was avoiding. I will close that door again.
I will turn around immediately and leave the area because I am not prepared for that. That's one of the things,
like, done that combat, but I really didn't need to because the goal that I was like seeking was already on the other, like in the room that I was in previously.
Yeah, I what I find really funny about this game, and there's the experience with Divinity Original Sin 2, and obviously what is very different between a real Dungeons and Dragons game with actual consequences, and you know, if you fuck up real bad and your character dies, then like that is how it works out. I do appreciate the fact that sometimes we're like, this situation is so terrible. Like everyone's dying, or like we're trying to keep ourselves up, but they just keep smoking us, that we just need to reload the save because everything has gone terribly. Larian's design of random pits of death in like every environment, and then someone's like, I'm gonna push you off the edge. I'm like, why did you do this?
Because it's an easy kill.
It is an easy kill, you know. So once, you know, you realize the game is willing to do that, so then you're like, I will also do that as well now, and it's really fun. But yeah, I don't know how many times I've been like, we've both been sitting there, it'll be nearly 1 a.m., and we're like, they fucked us so bad, we need to reload the save, or just go to bed. Like, we're done. We're done for the night. We're going. We're leaving. That's it.
I have had a couple combats like that where I just got absolutely bodied, and then I looked at the clock and I was just like, all right, I need to not be playing this game anymore today.
Yeah. the addiction has run its course for the day. We need to be able to function tomorrow somewhat, so we need to call it quits. But yeah.
Yeah, I have to go to bed or I won't be able to play more Baldur's Gate 3 tomorrow.
What are you going to do today? Play Baldur's Gate. What are you doing tomorrow? Go to work. Eat. Play Baldur's Gate, sleep. That is the vicious cycle right now.
Yeah, like maybe I'll catch a Commander game.
Maybe, you know, if I... Hey, we're running the Lexicon stream, you gonna show up? I guess, you know.
Like, man, I've got Baldur's Gate 3 to play.
Yeah, it is the game to play. Obviously, like, not everyone's gonna have... a computer rig that's good enough to play it right now, and PS5 players have to wait, and if you're an Xbox player, good luck, I guess? I don't know. Like, apparently, like, the hardware for the Xbox Series X or whatever version they're on right now, I don't know, I don't own an Xbox, just, like, can't handle split-screen co-op, so they just have to, like, play it by themselves.
Yikes. And also, big salutes to everybody on Mac, like my dude Bjorn with it, who co-host on MTG Lexicon. We got a big salutes to him because he's not, like, the Mac players don't get the game until like September sometime, so we're just like, we'll play multiplayer soon, my friend.
Yeah, it's just, I do find it funny that, like, I find it great that, like, Mac players are actually getting the chance, because I know that, like, Macs are not the notorious gaming PC, that, you know, it is literally like you're either Windows or Linux or whatever other crazy thing people are running out there. I don't know. Linux? I don't know. I'm not a computer person. I don't use it.
I did my time in those mines and I don't need to do that anymore.
I would like for this device to work. Windows. Okay, good. I can run 99% of the things I need to run on it.
Yeah, like I've got my nerd cred. I installed Gentoo. Like, don't come at me. I'm not doing that shit anymore. I don't have time for it.
But yeah, Baldur's Gate 3 has consumed my life and my girlfriend's life, and I imagine many other people's lives, including yourself.
Absolutely.
And it's so funny. There was a thing I was talking about with someone the other day, because I went to go out to play an actual in-person D&D game. Yeah, that's crazy, right? I've been so excited. I've been playing a ranger. And what I find great about games like Baldur's Gate 3, and obviously it's not the only 5th edition, like, emulation, if you want to call it that, but it has a very, you know, it has a game system that is very easy to get into, and maybe the scope of, like, what you can build is fairly limited. But what Baldur's Gate 3 allows you to do is obviously test out classes a bit, just to see how, like, well, how do you think it works in theory? Because they got all, like, the core rulebook stuff down pat. But the other thing, too, is that they allow you to kind of power game a little bit with all the legendary, like, items you come across, or the random, like, all right, you do get an armor plus one because, you know what, you deserve it. But also, let's get this, like, random, like, bunch of equipment that happens to synergize really well with, like, a barbarian or a paladin or a rogue or whatever.
And every time I pick up one of those, like, spell sparkler, like, items, I'm just like, perfect, I will put this on my lightning wizard.
Yeah, it's like, yep, there's, this is specifically for XYZ character, and they will do the thing and do it very well. There, like, for example, I was like, okay, so, going through the adventure. Okay, bracers of protection if you're not wearing armor, or I think maybe if you're wearing no armor and no shield. You get a plus two to AC. You're like, okay. So that's monks, and that's maybe sometimes barbarians. Karlach, here you go, my dear. You now have plus two AC. What were you wearing before? The bracer, you know, the gloves were okay. And then you're like, this axe does extra damage if you're below 50%. Well, Karlach would synergize with that really well, but I'm playing a paladin, and I get hit fairly often, so maybe if I get below 50% HP, I could do a little bit, you know, extra D4 of damage. Not a whole lot, but everything goes. Helm of Smiting, Paladin. Go, be free, my child. I saw a clip very recently, because obviously, like, when you're level 1 through, like, 4, you're like, okay, like, I'm playing, like, the melee class. I'm, like, doing one hit. No big deal. Hit level 5, you're like, I can now do 2 hits.
Ooh.
And you'd be surprised how much of a difference that makes, even if you are the term linear warriors, quadratic wizards, where, like, any spellcasters have, like, an infinite avenue of tackling an issue, but the fighter's like, I will smack this thing a couple times now, and that's great. It's so fun. We leveled up characters, and I started doing that. My girlfriend's like, "Why are you hit? How are you doing that?" I'm like, "We just do. It's our thing. We smack things with blades and axes and hammers, and we will now do it twice." And she's like, "That is big plays now." It's just really
just
funny.
Like shrugging and like it. I don't know. It says on my character sheet.
Yeah, it says I can do 2 attacks now, and then eventually I will do 3 attacks, and if I'm a fighter, I will do 4. Cool. And maybe if I'm a barbarian, I can do it as my bonus action. Who knows? You know, that's just the magic of D&D. But yeah, it is like, hey, what if we, like, take off the like, let's gamify 5e a little bit further. Like, let's take the tedium out of having, like, you don't care about arrows unless they're specialized.
I really appreciate that, because one of the things that, like, turns me off of, like, actually playing Dungeons & Dragons is keeping track of the minutia, like, movement speed and arrows and, like, encumberment and things like that, and just, like, how the game makes a lot of that not my problem is extremely helpful.
Yeah, it's just the night and day difference of, like, if you have a system that automatically does things for you, like, we'll use Magic Arena as an example, or MTGO, we're like, okay, outside of asking for you to, like, do you pass, like, priority and all this other stuff, is that, like, the math is done for you, all the actions are done for you, the system just handles it by itself, you're like, great, I now... I can continue to do whatever else I want to do. And like, obviously there's like the, okay, well, but if you're playing a video game, you are beholden to the restrictions of the video game. There's only so many character voice lines. There's only so many decisions you can do. And stuff like that. You're like, yes, I will also spend 10 minutes trying to unlock this door. And in a regular, like, D&D game, like, with other people, they'd be like, oh my god, you're like, no, I need to get this unlocked, let me do it. In this game, you're like, no, I'm gonna use inspiration, because inspiration's handed out like candy in Baldur's Gate 3, which I absolutely adore.
Checks makes it very helpful for people who are anxious and hate failing, like me.
Rando, like, guidance from your resident cleric and or person that just happens to have guidance as a cantrip, so you literally just do that for everything. And it's just that, yeah, a lot of the gamey parts that the system automates now is incredibly useful. I'm happy that we have access to it, because it just makes a lot of it so much easier to do. And then you can just go around the world and explore the little nooks and crannies and find the random hole that says, "Ooh, I'm too small, I'm too big to get in there." And you move on with your day. And then you also get a bit of the power gaming stuff that the 5th edition system won't allow you to do by...
No, I get to go in those holes, though. I chose Druid, so I just wild shape into a cat.
A cat, and you just go through it. Okay, yeah, okay. Well, we haven't done that, but,
You should try probably. It sometime. It whips ass.
Yeah.
I found, like, an owlbear den, and I was just like, a cat waltzing through there, and then there was some loot that I found, so I'm just like, I'll put all of this in my pockets, and then I'll waltz on out as a cat again, and these owlbears will say nothing to me. They do not care.
Yeah. There's a lot of things where I'm like, looking at how well designed, like, the environments are, and all these, like, little details of, like, okay, It is saying that I can or cannot do something, but what am I looking at? I'm looking at it through the lens of, like, okay, what is our team composition? I'm a paladin, so I'm already out on, like, 90% of these things that isn't combat and or conversation. Yep. So what are the other angles of attack that we got? It's like, okay, so you're the rogue, so you can sneak. We respect Asterion into a druid, so we could be using him more for that stuff, but we just haven't done that yet, because we're right in the thick of other people's character development stuff, so we're like, we're gonna focus on them for a little bit. And it's just, yeah, the game allows you to interact with the 5th edition system in a really refreshing way, and there's no tedium. Like, depending on who you're playing, like, if you're playing with other people or not, you don't have to wait for anyone or anything. You could just be like, yeah, I will spend a bunch of time trying to break into this house, and I will reload and or use as much inspiration or random d4s as much as I can to increase my probability of doing the thing that I want to do. And the other thing too is it's so fast. Sometimes combat gets a little confusing considering how fast things are happening, where I'm like, I literally have no idea what just happened. But like that is the thing of like how refreshing it is to go into these combats and being like, all right, what is my course of action? Okay, I've used all of my spell slots as a paladin today, so now I'll be a suboptimal fighter, just smashing things with an axe. And I will do that until the deed is done. And then,
it fucking, like, works, though.
Yeah, and compared to, like, you know, like, the other day, we were for the session that I had, we were going to get into combat at the end of it. Mm-hmm. And we were like, you know what? It's like 10:30 and combat could probably take like 2 hours. So we will not do that.
Yeah, let's not do that today.
We packed up and we're like, we will do this in like 3 weeks. But in Baldur's Gate 3, you're like, let's do the combat now, and we'll get it done in 10 minutes, if you know, at most. Or we'll just Zerg rush the one rando goblin that happened to be being like, hey, you don't do that. And you're like, today is a bad day to be a goblin, the only goblin in initiative order, and you just absolutely annihilate it.
Today is a bad day to be the goblin who said, I'll sound the war drums.
Yeah, we... We were like, hey, let's go to the goblin camp and start aggroing it. And sure enough, they're like, we're going to sound the alarm. I'm like,
I don't think you will, actually.
Mother, I heard was the screams of a dying animal. Prepare to die. It's just, yeah, it's been fun being like, how do we want to encounter this? Well, it's only one guy. Yeah, you're right. Let's go bust some skulls or whatever, you know? It's like,
I really like how there's options that are like, obviously, like, you can take this via combat. And usually when a game is like, this is a stealth mission, you need to be stealthy here, I'm like, ew, gross, do not ever make me do this. But in this game, I'm like taking every possible option to not have to roll initiative.
Yeah.
And like, it gives you so many different ways that you can do that, and that level of like creativity that it inspires is like fucking wild to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of there's just a lot of things about the design of the game that I'm like, you know, this might not translate into a real person game very well, but like the opportunity exists. Like the other day someone was like, man, verticality. I'm like, me in my dreams of like having sky battles or trying to have a fight on the side of a cliff or like, mm-hmm. whatever, like, you know, it's being realized here because the game system allows you to interact with it safely. And then like, if something goes wrong, you can be like, I'll reload the save, but now I know the threat of being knocked off the side of a cliff 200 feet.
Yeah, you're just like, is a reality. That is what that does. Okay.
Yeah, like, you know, I saw Will get knocked into a hole and I'm like, oh, he's dead. Wait a minute. I gave him Eldritch Blast with the knockback effect. Reload the save. Hey, Will, hit that guy on the side of the cliff. Boom. I'm like, oh. And then, like, the fact that they're like, okay, take a look at your options here. You got your, you know, you got your actions, you got your bonus actions. Did you know a bonus action was to shove? And I'm like, well, I'm physically strong. Shove. Ha-ha. I have now saved myself one other NPC enemy trying to kill me. That seems like good action economy, and it's just so fun to have the game do that for you. Mm-hmm. And it all, like, it's just good design. There's a lot of things that like I have to mentally discard by playing Divinity Original Sin 2, because all of like your character's abilities are like very open-ended. And they're on cooldowns for like a certain number of turns after you use them. So I was like, okay. But I went into this and I'm like, hey, how come I can't Divine Smite anymore? I ran out of spell slots. Oh, okay. We will now be a lot more conservative with the Divine Smites until you learn that your Oath of Vengeance Paladin, when he crits, auto does Divine Smites. So when you're going up against a bunch of sleeping or prone targets and have a higher probability of critting, suddenly your spell slots just, like, disappear. it's sleeping targets get auto-critted. So
so many spells that are, like, wild fucking powerful that I didn't, like, realize the context for how powerful they are until I'm, like, playing this. Like, sleep, just putting a guy to sleep, and he's just, like, their biggest fighter. Suddenly he's, like, on the ground, and you're like, oh, perfect, now I will simply wail on you uninterrupted. And then he's just dead. Like, there's nothing they get to do about that. And this other time, I was, like, trying to sneak into a building, and there was, like, this cracked wall, and we, like... Every time that I had tried to break it previously, it, like, the noise alerted everybody who was sleeping around it. So I'm just like, shit, that's not the way that I need to do that. But I do need to break this wall. And then I remembered silence. And so I cast silence on the wall. And then I just had Karlak fucking wail on it with a hammer. And nobody woke up because they couldn't hear shit outside the bubble.
One of the things that the fact that Larian's kind of like environmental systems that they use, like move a crate or a barrel or jump on top of XYZ. The amount of times that I've had to jump around the environment is the most that I've ever had to jump in a turn-based game, period. And jumping is also incredibly deceptively powerful if you're able to like augment your jump. Like, the ability to scale around the environment just feel is so good.
Yeah,
the ability
Karlak to is draw strong as fuck. She can jump basically wherever, so you can get
she
her
doesn't
in
give
such
a fuck.
Good positions. And I think later game, you get an ability where, like, if she's got a heavy enough weapon, her jumping does damage.
Does damage, yeah. It's I'm like, oh, let me jump into that ground. Oh, it deals damage? Excellent use of my jump action. I will now attack them. It's great. And like getting certain barrel types of like, hey, let me put this smoke powder barrel safely into a group of enemies and then have the spellcaster cast firebolt on it and have it explode because it's a fucking powder keg. Mm-hmm. They're like, ah, and I'm like, this door is giving us trouble. Why? Put a barrel bomb in front of it and just blow it up, because that stuff deals additional damage to environmental stuff. So it's like, I could swing my sword at it, or shoot a spell at it, or shoot an arrow at it if I'm really desperate. Or I could just blow it up with a barrel.
I need to find these barrels that everyone's talking about. I haven't found an explosive barrel yet.
They are around. They have like a little red painting kind of pattern on top of it to kind of help signify it. So if you find it, that's where you'll know. Also, being able to search an environment with like the like, all right, let me extend my sonar beacon around my person. Mm-hmm. What's in the environment here? A bag I didn't see on the table, the tiny chest that is stuck around a corner I didn't see, a random scroll stuck in the wall that I can't grab, fantastic, but there's just so many game things that have been applied to it where I'm like, this is so incredibly fun to play, and I'm glad that all these systems exist. Thank you, Larian Studios, for making a banger game. And yeah, it's just wonderful. I've had so much fun, and I'm glad you're also having fun and just getting deep into every corner of Act One. And now that my only advice, I don't know if you've gotten to it or what, because you said you're heading to the Goblin Camp, or you're in the Goblin Camp right now.
We're in the Goblin Camp right now. I literally just talked to Priestess Gut to see if she could take the worm out of my eye, and I only had one person, like, talking to her, so there was three other people, like, standing around. And she's just like, okay, yeah, I can help you for sure. And I'm extremely suspect because, like, she's also giving off vibes that she's also got a worm in her head, and she's talking about the Absolute, and I'm just like, there is no fucking way that the Absolute is not an Elder Brain. It has to be an Elder Brain. And so I'm telling her that she's got a tadpole in her head too.
Me once again pointing at the screen like Leonardo DiCaprio being like, wait, got true soul slash cultist of the Absolute?
Yes, with the cultist of the Absolute background, exactly. I posted that exact thing in my Discord channel. It was just like, the thing. She's doing the thing. She's cultist of the Absolute.
Also, I'm like, wait a minute. Can I get the cult of the Absolute? Because I, too, would like +3/+3 flying, death touch, ward 3, pay 3 life, and at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice a creature in D&D. That seems real strong. I would love to fly. But yeah, there's just some stuff in this game that has been so fun. Also, one thing, I don't know if you've done it yet, did you get the brand?
Yeah, Gail did, because we talked to Priestess Gut to see if she would help us take that out of her eye. She branded his hand and then locked us in prison because she wanted to see us turn into a squid.
Cool. Great. Yep. Okay, good. Yep.
We actually ended up breaking out of that prison, though, because the floor has cracks in it. So I just had Gale smash that and then jump down there and then Misty step out of the spider's pit.
Misty step
what
has
a
been
powerful
so good.
Spell.
Oh, there's just so much about this game that I'm like, they did everything so well. And I know a lot of these are just spells and effects that like are in the 5th edition game. But I'm like, having it all automatically and being presented to you and being like, you know, I never usually know when's a good time to cast a spell. But right now in this game, in this context, seems real good. Seems real good. I'm flexing my brain muscles, you know, trying to get out of it. It's just, yeah, it's just a blast. I've had so much fun.
Absolutely loving it. Okay, so what about this brand?
Oh, no, it'll come up.
No, oh, fuck.
it may be important, you know. I did not take it, and I might be slightly regretting it. But you may not. You might benefit from having it.
I'm that gif of that, like, elongated, like, scary alien figure that's, like, captioned 3 a.m. going back for more whatever from the refrigerator. You, like, replace what you want there. I'm like me at Baldur's Gate 3 going back for more tadpole. Like, I'm trying to use all of my illithid powers and, well, not so much on my party. That feels a little bit weird. But, like, everybody that we're encountering with, if I have the option to use my illithid powers, I do. And it is so helpful in this camp. But I hope that this brand is gonna enhance those powers and not just like absolutely melt my brain.
Yeah, I have not tapped into those effects yet, but I have a feeling that probably just to get more out of the game I will be doing so. I just every time it's like, ooh, it's hungry, it craves more, and I'm like, no. Let us not do that. That seems real bad.
Feed it.
Alright. I'll look into it, but I'm afraid. I'm just constantly afraid. I'm like, what if you dig too deep and your character becomes a squid? You know?
Well, I mean,
and then I'm
the
like
bad ending. Starting the playthrough.
And then I'm like, you know, like if that happens, I mean like obviously like on one hand, most people are like, why didn't know that was going to happen? I'm like, okay, what part of they put a squid tadpole in your head that was going to transform you into them? Did you not see the intro cutscene of the people horrifically transforming into an illithid?
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, proceed with caution. But yeah, it's, yeah, there's just so much to do. And I can't wait to get back to it later today.
Yeah, same.
I'm
gonna find the slot in Tabarax for literally the Cultist of the Absolute card because
there we go. There we go. Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
I can feed Shadowborns to him on upkeep. It's perfect.
Hey, it's a good free one mana. Your creature just gets all these sick keywords and abilities, and it's just yeah. Hey, people, play more backgrounds. That is the last message I got for this episode. If you can't play Baldur's Gate 3. Play backgrounds from the set that was for Baldur's Gate 3.
Backgrounds are extremely powerful. Look at the ones that are even like tangentially related to your game plan and see if you can maybe work that into your deck because they're going to offer so much extra power to you and you don't realize it until they're on the field. Like, in particular, if you have partners, you should be considering like at least
you,
one background.
At least
like,
one or two. Yeah.
Just think about it for me, okay?
You know, Sword Coast Sailor, Cultist of the Absolute,
Tavern Brawler. If you have partners, you impulse draw two cards on upkeep and your commanders get buffed by whatever the mana value they exile. Like, what's not to love? You're drawing cards.
Far Traveler allows you to flicker a tap thing, so you get a 3-mana teleportation circle, or Conjurer's Closet light, you know. You get Agent of the Iron Throne if you're playing treasures. So every time you sacrifice a creature or an artifact, your opponents lose one life. And, you know, if you have two commanders, they lose two life. And you're playing treasures, they're going to be losing a lot of life. So yeah, backgrounds are great. People should be playing them more.
Absolutely. Co-signed.
And yeah, Quinn, thank you for coming on once again. It has been absolutely lovely chatting with you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been absolutely lit.
And once again, as usual, where can people find you on the internet
You can find me on Twitter at Girlic Energy in the Twitch chat at Girl Redacted Energy. I be co-hosting with MTG Lexicon on Twitch on Saturdays, and they've got D&D every other Friday. We've also got a YouTube channel where we keep all of our VODs for the D&D and MTG content, as well as my podcast, DrownSecrets.fm. So check all of that out there. Click the links and the thumbs up and give me the engagement and the good chemicals. That all feels very good and satisfying to your Fae Empress.
All right, and that is it for this episode. Thank you for listening, everyone, and we'll see you on the next one.
Later, gamers.